Hello everyone, my name is Diego Barrazas and my guest today is Kankyo Tanier.
As a child, I was very connected with universe. Usually we fill our life with activities, with knowledge, but I think the most revolutionary practice nowadays is to do nothing. I understand now that my thoughts are not me. And this was a huge change. It changed everything. This was the best discovering of my life.
Hello everyone, welcome to The Mentes. My name is Diego Barrazas and my guest today is Kankyo Tanier. Kankyo Tanier is a Buddhist nun, author and speaker. She's the author of The Gift of Silence, Finding Peace in a World Full of Noise, and she's also known for being what you could call a modern Buddhist nun, putting in an understandable language the Buddhist philosophy and teachings. Today we talk about how she got to where she is right now and what she has learned on her journey. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Let me know what you think in our social media. Enjoy my episode with Kankyo Tanier. Kankyo, tell me if I am mispronouncing it. Is it Kankyo, right?
Kankyo, yes.
Kankyo, okay.
It's good.
Is that your birth name or did you change it?
Yes, it's not my birth name. It's my name for when I became a Zen nun. We receive a name at this occasion.
And do you choose a name?
No, the master, the Zen master who gave us the ordination will choose the name.
Okay, yes. And does it mean something?
Yes, the name? For sure. The meaning is very great. It means observation of the mirror of the universe.
Okay.
A big program.
Yeah, it is. Perfect. So let's start this now. And welcome, Kankyo. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. And I promise I won't make you lose your time and waste your words. First, I want to start with something that I believe is really important for many of us who are listening to you and learning what you're teaching, and is answering the doubt that many of us have that when did you decide to become a nun? Because many of us have this doubts about what to do in our lives. If it's too late to make changes, or should I have started before? You know, and I know at 18, I think is when you first read this book, and it kind of made a shift in your mind. But could you please talk to me about all of these? What was your life before? Also, sorry for making this so long, but something I also want to express is, I think people forget that nuns or monks were regular people once, right? Like, and regular with quote unquote. No, but
regular people in a way.
Yeah, but there's this mystique around this aura of mystery around nuns and monks. And we forget that they many times have brothers, sisters, partners. So I would like to make a little dive into that first. What was your childhood like? Where did you live? What did you do as a musician and all of that? And then when did you start shifting to all of this? And then we can go deeper into that. Is it okay with you?
Yes, perfect. Yes. Perfect. So I'm born in the area from Paris, in the suburb, and it was a very interesting life because it was a mixed population from many people coming from Africa, from different parts of Europe, from all over the world. It's and so I've been brought up there in this atmosphere, very interesting. My parents were or are Catholic and very deep in practice. So we went to the church once or twice a week, and so I received a Catholic education. Mm-hmm. And this form of Catholicism was very very interesting also because it was dedicated to help people. It was we learned how to welcome all those people coming from all over the world. We learned how to live good together, and I receive such very interesting values from this education. And later on, we moved in another part from France, no more in Paris, because it was too crowded and too noisy. And so my parents wanted to have a smaller town.
Sorry for interrupting you, but sorry for interrupting. And I'm going to interrupt you several times because I want to double click on some stuff. What did they do, your parents? Like, what did they do for a living? And did you have brothers or sisters?
Yes. So my parents were, my mother is social, social helper. So she helped people who has difficulties in life.
Okay.
And my father had a very incredible life. So he did many, many different things. He was in the also military in a part of his life. And at the end, he was the director of a clinic to help, like a rehab clinic in the end. And I have two brothers and sisters. I have one brother, younger, and one sister. Yes.
Older or younger, your sister?
Older. One year older than me. Yes.
Okay, so the five of you moved to another town, right? From Paris, the busy life and a lot of movement, you said to go to a calmer place. What happened next?
And then, so I was 16, but then I get, I met studies in universities. So I was a bit in advance at school. So I get to university with 16 years old, and it was very great. So I could already at this age discover a little part of freedom. So I would say my young times, like during 8-10 years, one of my only goals was to discover the world, and also I wanted to make parties. So techno parties or music or everything. I wanted really to, of course, to study a little bit, but also to make
a little bit. So you went to parties and social life and, you know, traveling, like the any 16-year-old dream, right? Like, okay.
A lot.
Were you popular in school? Were you like one of the popular girls?
Yes, normal. Not so popular, but I would like, normal person, but a little bit wild already. Yes, I had no difficulties at school because I learned I love to study, but also I love to find already as young person different way of thinking. So I tried punk, I tried gothic, hard heavy metal, and I was everywhere. How I was very interesting about all these hippies time, you know, the 70s, how they decided to change societies or way to be. And so I was a deep fan from The Doors, Jim Morrison, was his grave in Paris. So it was a famous place for us to go there.
Okay. But at that time, I mean, looking back at that time, these different stages of your life, you said punk, goth, et cetera, was it coming from a place of, I'm not sure what do I like? I mean, like trying to find an identity, or was it more like, okay, I want to experiment different things and I am enjoying this and now I'm enjoying this other thing. Like, where did it come from? And I'm asking these questions because I think many of us can relate, and I want to later make a connection between what you're doing now and that time. So I will just like to know that.
It was both sides. From the beginning, I like to discover new things. I like to have open eyes, to meet people. I like to know how they work. Like maybe you were asking all these questions. I'm very curious of people, of the world, and different ways of thinking. But also, childhood and a teenager was not easy because I didn't feel very good in an emotional way. And I was not very enthusiastic about the future. I didn't knew exactly what I want to do in life. The model that was presented to me was like, okay, now you go to university, you will try to have a good work with a lot of money or enough money, and then you go to have a house, children, family. And I was like, it was scaring me. Huh? I was okay. Really, oh, I don't want
anxiety.
No, oh, yes. It was is it that life? Is it only this? But I had experiences in the past of some other connection with the universe. So a part of me, which was not really alive at this period, but a little part was in reaction, like telling me that could not be only this. But it was, I would say, I was also doing party, drinking a lot of alcohol, or sometimes taking drugs because it was not easy inside. It was like an inner fight or a very big lack of security. I was afraid of the future. I was not, it was not good. Not, it's interesting, but not all good memories.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing that with me. I really appreciate you opening that to me. And obviously, if I ask something that causes some type of you don't want to answer, just tell me and you don't have to answer. But it comes from a good place.
This is life. If it's only to speak about everything what we do very good, it's not real. Huh? My point with sharing with people is to speak about real life. Not
Thank
ideal.
You. Perfect. Okay? That's what we need here. We need more of real stuff, right? So, and my questions come from a good place. So, just bear with me a little bit. I want to know now, during that time that you were having these hardships and, maybe bad company sometimes that will kind of take advantage, have some drugs or whatever. What was happening in your family? Did your parents knew that you were having this bad time? Did you ever try to tell them? Did you ever ask for help? What was that, the context there?
Yes, I knew, but in the same time, I was I had good studies. You know, I had my flat. I had a work to pay my studies and my flat, and I could. So there were worries. A little bit, but they knew, okay, I will not so much. So, but of course there was some period where they were on phone or talking to me, my mother, are you okay? I know she was a little bit worried. Like many, many, parents, I guess. Huh?
Yeah. And I guess that those are the most difficult type of kid, like the kid that's really good at school, but also parties, because you cannot ground them, right? If you were doing bad at school, they could tell you oh, you're doing bad, but you're doing good. So it's well, what can I say, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and how, because I think there's a big leap, a big jump between I like to party and listen to music and that, to silence and being in a monastery, it's a really big jump. So what happened in between? What else did you leave and until you decide to start changing your way of living?
So I finished studies and then I did two different kinds of things. First was journalist, because I, from the beginning, I love to write. And as I told you before, I'm curious of the world. So I started to work as a journalist during 2 years. And also during my studies, I began to sing and to take a lot of singing course for me. I was in jazz band or funk music or also French chanson. You know, Edith Piaf.
La Vie en Rose. Yes, yes. I heard you in your TED Talk sing a little bit of that song.
Yeah. And so after this, I finished my studies and I thought, okay, these studies, I don't want to work. I studied the law, public law. But okay. I didn't want to work in this direction. So I decided to make a formation training to become singing teacher. And after 1 year, I start to teach singing to other people. So this was also very interesting period. But at 26, I met first time the Zen practice, and then I my life changed a little bit. I will tell you later.
Okay. Hold on a little bit. So what at that age when you decided not to continue with law and trying to pursue a different thing, in your mind, what was the end goal? Like, what did you wanted to do when you grew up, right? Because I think you already decided, I don't want to go through that traditional path of earning a lot of money and getting married and having kids. And you also didn't want to pursue what you studied, that was law. What were you expecting of life? And was your opinion about the future still the same as before? Like, okay, the future is not bright enough, or were you already kind of changing that way of thinking?
No, it was not clear. It was very difficult at this moment to project in the future. So, of course, I wrote as journalist, and also I start to give courses and to earn a little bit of money, but I could never imagine a future. That was a problem because I couldn't project in something that I really wanted. Of course, I was quite younger, so maybe it was because of my age, I don't know. But it was difficult. It was really now, not the future.
Okay,
and it was a part of the problem.
Actually, I think I'm going to go a little bit forward and then come back, because now that you mentioned the future, I'm curious. Many of as I understand it, mindfulness and meditation and that type of stuff, or practices, sorry for saying stuff, that type of practices is a lot about the now, right? And not living in the past and not living in the future. But right now we're talking about the importance of it being able to see a future and maybe pursue it or not. How does that work together or not? Like, you know, like, is should we worry about the future or think about the future or just think about now? I know I'm asking a little more technical question, but then we'll come back to where we are.
You're right. It's a very important question. It's and very interesting. Actually, to think about future, we have our mental capacity. Our brain. Mm-hmm. So my brain can create images about the future, or try to imagine what will I do. And so it's like a tool. It's very useful. The point of living in the now, it doesn't mean that we never use the brain to project. It means that we can stop it if we don't need it. So you recover the control of your brain, to make it short. The problem is for many people that the brain is making his stuff by himself, and that we follow what is in the mind. We follow the mental activity. So that we can speak a lot later if you want.
Perfect, but, yeah, perfect.
Doesn't mean that I don't project or I don't make plan. It means that I know that I have certain periods of my day where I will plan, and after I don't need it.
Okay. And now coming back, we'll talk of this later, but coming back to the story, when or how did you, when did it click that you have to do something different? Like, when was the first time that you understood, or you had a little bit of clearness that there was this other path for you? Because right now, if today we go back in time and people will say, oh, this was the best decision for her, right? Becoming a nun and being like, it was a great decision, but there was a time maybe where you first thought about this and there was no guarantee that it would be the right path. So when, do you know when did that happen, or do you have some moments in your life where you started thinking about pursuing this other way of living?
So my first discovering of this Buddhism path was with a book from Dalai Lama. And this, I had the chance to get it in the age of like 18 or 20. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. So I found this book. I started to read it in a cafe. Mm-hmm. And then my view of things changed.
It in was what like, way?
Yes, it means suddenly I felt I was not alone. What was written in the book is that every human being are connected in an interdependent way, with the nature, with other people, with the stars, with all the universe. This is one of the teaching of Buddha, interdependency. Okay. And this, when I read it, it was like I felt relief. It was like, okay. And then it's like an opening of the space, of the inner space. So this was the first time. But of course, after I came back on my old habits, so my friends, my party and music and everything.
You get distracted.
Yes, but I knew I had this like a jewel somewhere in my pocket. So after this, my life was different because then after a while, I was a little bit fed up. There was no sense in my life. I was like, okay, I can do what I want, but I don't have something calling me. But I had these jewels. And did jewel. And then I started searching on internet for a Buddhist retreat. And I found a special one in summer with many students. And I decided to go there. And then I
came. At also at 18, 19, or it was?
No, I was 20. It was after being fed up with going in two parties.
Okay.
So much. So after I said, no, I cannot continue with that. And now it starts to be really boring.
One of those Sundays with hangover and like feeling bad and say, okay,
yes,
this has got to change.
Not necessary, but it was like, oh, it's always the same. The dresses are changing, but the music is changed, but it's always, I'm fed up.
Okay, so but like, for example, you discovered this jewel, as you're saying, right? This piece of wisdom or knowledge that made you feel at ease, but you got distracted for maybe a couple of years. I don't know how much time. Why if you already, like, why do you think that happens? Because I think it happens to many of us that we see a little bit of light, and instead of going to that, we continue with our old habits. Why do you think that happened? And how long did it took for you to decide to reopen that door or try to connect with that?
It's not easy to answer. But anyway, the habits are sometimes very strong. And also at this period, a part of me also knew I had to make all those experiences. And I'm very happy that I could go at this time to the point where I was fed up. So because now I don't need to do a party or, I mean, okay, I can have fun with my friends, but this, so it was like, okay, now it's done. So this party's over, you know, and then I can go on the other step. And also in my life from childhood, I always have had like a mystic call, I could say. Also with 6, 7, 8 years old, I was very happy at church or because I felt like opening. So, and with teenager, I forgot about because I had no other interest. But as a child, I was very connected with universe. So it was like something always there somewhere.
Okay. So, and how old were you when you decided to go to that first Buddhist camp that you were saying?
Yes, I was 26.
Okay, so years. So it was almost 10 years after you first discovered this book that you decided to try something, right? And what did you discover there? Was it what you were expecting? What was it not?
Yes, it was a period of my life, so I didn't know really what I wanted to do in the future. Everything was open, and then I said, now it's time, I go there. And the most impressive thing was the discovering of Zazen. Zazen is the name of Zen meditation. Mm-hmm. Of course, in this, I also loved the atmosphere with ceremonies, with people living together in a very kind way, paying attention to each other. So everything was connected with my values. But the most why I stayed and why I did after my spiritual path was this discovering this experience of Zen meditation.
Was this one the one in Japan?
It was in France, in the center of France. There is a very big monastery where it could be 400 people. So it's a very huge place, and it's impressive when you have 400 people around you practicing meditation. It's something.
And how long did that first time lasted? Like, for how long was that?
10 days.
10 days.
10 days. First, I registered for 5 days, and then I decided to stay a little bit longer.
Did you go by yourself?
Yes, by train. Yes.
Like, but it wasn't like, I'm trying to like many of us seek courage in friends, you know, like, hey, I'm going to try this. Can you come with me? And I don't want to go by myself. Did you were having those types of conversations with your friends? Like, I'm exploring this, or they were not interested, or, you know, like, was it weird for you to go there for them?
No, because in general, in my life, when I do new things or adventure, I like to be alone.
Okay.
So I prefer, it's more like exciting to discover by myself. So, okay. I said to my friends where I was going, to my family too, but I went there alone.
And did your parents tell you anything? Like, what are you doing? That's weird. Or were they okay with it? Or...
Yes, they were okay. They were very okay. They wanted to know if it was not a strange place for like a sect, huh? Like for sure.
Yeah, like a cult. Uh-huh.
Yes. Like. But after, they are very happy because it's so a spirituality, and so they are a spiritual person. So it was fitting with their views.
Okay, so you went there, you enjoyed it, and what happened in that moment that like, because the first time you discovered that, you got distracted for 10 years, almost 10 years, right? The second time that you approached that, what was different?
So the first time it was only reading a book. And the second time it was like an experience. It was very... what we describe, what old master described about meditation is coming back in your own house. Mm. As if I was always distracted with my brain going there, 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 and suddenly body and mind are one. And suddenly you are, it's the experience of the present moment. Maybe for the first time of one of the first time of my life, there were some other experiences in childhood, but I was there having the, I was hearing the sound, really. I was smelling the incense smell. I was really there with all my cells, all my body. And this was amazing. It, I felt really relief. Like, oh, that's, that I was the, that's the sense of my life. That's what I want to do.
Okay, and what happened next? Like from there on, what happened? What so was the next step?
When I came back home, everything was changed. So I start to find places where I could meditate. But in my city, there was nothing. So I went in the area, then I traveled a little bit. And after a while, I find the monastery where I'm now today. I went there twice or three times. And then I spoke with the master there. And I decided after some months to live here. Not okay. to become a nun, but to... it was very clear. I found something. So I... with my family, friends, and
also, what did they tell you there? Like when you said, "I'm gonna leave,"
they were okay. I think they knew it from. They knew it.
Yeah. Okay. Like finally, like she's listening to her calling, and yes. And how does it work? Like, do you just go to one of these places and say, "Hey, I want to be here," and they'll say, "Like, okay, there's space, be here," or is it like a, like, do you need to register into something or make like some sort of like, I don't know, it's like a university when you need to apply and they will accept you, or you know, because this is so far from my understanding right now. Mm-hmm. So I would like to understand how do one starts getting involved in all of this world.
For beginners, first you have to register for small periods. Like you can come for 2 days or 1 week, 2 months. I don't know. This is the first step. And after, you can ask the master. Okay, I would like to stay. Is it possible? And he decides. Okay. He would say, okay, I think maybe it's not a good idea, or please welcome. So as I went there like 2 or 3 times, and I was very motivated. So he said, okay, please welcome. And after, if we live in a monastery, everyone is paying a small amount of money for their stay. So after 20 years, I'm still paying for my stay, huh? It's like we need this money to make this place living.
Yeah. Okay. So when was the time? Because I heard in your TED talk that you went to a retreat in Japan, and yes. Like
10 years later.
Oh, it was later. Yeah. So first you went to this place at this monastery. How many years went by before you became a nun, if that's the right word? And what happens? Like, what's the preparation like? What type of practices do you have to do? Could you open for me the doors of this mystery and try to let us know what's going on, mm-hmm. or how is it like?
So first at the monastery, I was like a lay person, and I take care of different things. Like at the beginning, I was with cleaning, and then I did the shop because we have a small den shop, so I was in charge of the shop. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you also that in Zen Buddhism, monks and nuns, they have they can work outside if necessary. And during this period, the monastery is in countryside, But I went to the city every week, 2 days, to work there as a singing teacher.
Okay.
So there is a city nearby called Strasbourg. There is 300,000 people living there, and so I gave courses there. And in the so in the monastic life is quite intensive. It's the same for lay people and for monks and nuns. So we have meditation morning, evening, and intensive periods twice a month with a lot of meditation during the day. We have ceremony, chantings, and we study, we are studying Buddhism, and we also work a lot for the community, every different kind of works. And so my first step in Buddhism was to receive what we call the precepts. So we receive, as lay people, you receive 10 precepts, not to kill, not to be angry, nor to take things, not to steal. Many things are impossible to do. It's like a goal, huh? But every day is a yes. And after, so at this ceremony precepts, I did 1 year after, or no, 3 months after coming in the temple and in the monastery. And 1 year after this, I asked about non-ordination because for me, it was clear that that's what I wanted to do in my life. So I had no doubt or no. And the master saw it directly also. So he said, okay. Welcome.
Were you not scared, or were you not like doubting that maybe, because I don't know how does it work, but I suppose it's once you go like once you become a nun or a monk, there's no going back. Or I mean,
yes, in the, you can quit, huh?
What?
You can go and you can quit the monastery when you want. You can okay. also decide not to be monks and nuns or none anymore.
Does so it we happen are not, often?
It's open, and also the monastery where I am is very open to public. So we receive many people from cities, from beginners. It's not like a Catholic monastery where you have to be in silence from morning to evening, and that where you cannot go out. It's very connected with social life, with society.
Okay. I wasn't sure about that because I once heard Andy Puddicombe, the guy who co-founded Headspace, and I heard him talking a little bit about one experience he had that he did a retreat of silence or something. I can't remember. That's what I had in my mind first, that you had to be in silence a lot of the time and not see people. But it's the other way around, right? Now that I am understanding, you can live almost a normal life, but coming back to your values and to the meditation, right?
Yeah. We also have a lot of periods of silence, but not all the year. So we have an intensive period, full silence, a lot of meditation, many times a year, but also like today it was a normal day, I would say. So we have different rituals. The program is very strict because we wake up and then it's tak 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 tak. But in this strict program there is a lot of freedom.
Okay. And do you ever, because now that I'm understanding that it's not so strict, do you ever, like, or does your mind makes you want to go to your old habits sometimes? Like for
taking
example, like, or alcohol, or going to parties, or, you know, like, how does it, how do you manage that? Because there's this thing that I think of, I'm not sure if I'm not sure if I'm going to say something that's very politically correct, but you know, like in Catholic religion, that they say like to priest, you cannot do a bunch of stuff that is human stuff, you know, like having sex or, you know, and doing other thing apart from that religion, like working on somewhere else or whatever. I imagine that people have some urges or like they want to, like when you're on a diet, you want to try some other food sometimes or not. How do you manage that? How do you like, what's the position or the mindset from a nun and a monk or the Buddhism religion to like, what's their posture on all of that?
Interesting. Well, your question is very interesting. So first of all, I can tell you, in my tradition, it's possible to have a partner. So you don't need to be single, monks and nuns. So I have a partner, and it's normal, like in some like pastor. I don't know how
you say.
Quite similar. So. So there is no problem. Of course, what I will not do is to have a partner and another one. It's not in my values and not what I would like to do in life. Huh? Mm-hmm. So this is it's not the same in all different Buddhist traditions, but most of them it's possible. So. Then with alcohol, so drugs and alcohols are not forbidden, but drugs are forbidden. For alcohol, I can say it's recommended not to drink too much. I mean, not to get a bit out of the... Yes, not drunk. All our activities are to be aware of what we are doing. So, of course, we have these precepts. But I can tell you, as I was a young nun for 20 years, with some of my friends, monks or nuns, sometimes we drink a little bit too much. We drank. I was also 26, 28, not regularly, I would say, huh? But sometimes we drink a little bit of wine and it was okay. And what for me is important, no, I don't need it anymore. But it took 20 years, a bit less because I don't drink now for some years already. But it was a path. Step by step. And when I was young, it was good for me to have, okay, it's not very okay, but I can do it once or twice a year, or you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And then little by little, my nun's life start to be more spiritual, more strong, but it was not from the beginning like a high mountain to climb. So, and now that's why today I feel very peaceful because it was a progressive. And that's, I think maybe that's why now I'm still none, because otherwise I think maybe I would have quit. I don't know. It would have been very difficult or very strong.
Yeah, like a shock. It's instead of it was gradual and it became like a normal way of living instead of making a really hard effort to be able to sustain that type of life. And did you ever
about effort? Just short. There is a very interesting sentence of my master, the one who created the place. He said, try to put to make in your life, to create in your life effort that you can continue for a long time. Okay. And this is very interesting, I think.
Yes, it is. Because we have this, I mean, in our civilization, there's this thing that we want everything fast and you know, like, 4-week program for becoming strong, or you know, like have a beach body and like everything you wanna, like a big change and sacrifice a lot instead of doing that gradual thing and putting the enough effort that will make it last for a lifetime, right? So yeah. But coming back, you said something really interesting for me that you were talking about this gradual thing. I wonder, and I would like you to explain to me a little bit, is there different moments in your, like once you're already on the monastery, that these teachings clicked differently? You know, like maybe at first you might be, I don't know, but you might be on a meditation thinking like, oh, what are these people doing? What am I supposed to be doing right now? You know, like am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? And then you kind of like, or maybe you see like 2 years in, you see people doing stuff and you still don't believe everything, but you do it because that's what everyone's doing. And you're trying to maybe to believe. And is there like a moment when things start shifting and say like, now I get it. Or like now I really believe, like, is that, does that also change?
Yes, of course. At the beginning, there was during 8 years, I would say 8 years, or yes, I was doing things with enthusiasm, with energy. I really wanted to go deeper, and I put a lot of energy. I was always like, yes, come on, do so. But also I had a lot of big emotions who brought up, like I was very angry. I was very sad, not so sad, but angriness was like, what are they doing? Why is this? Why? And as we live in community, there are many occasions to fight together, not to fight, but to have inner fight, like, why this one? And this last some years, and at the same period, I was also doing nearby a therapy in order to understand better my emotions and things like this. Then I went to Japan, and then was this experience that I explained in TEDx. And this was the first, it was very interesting because it was like, okay, now I understand better what I'm doing. But after Japan, 1 year later, I would say, I really had another experience, which was, I understand now that my thoughts are not me. It was like, there is this personality, there is this way to behave, but I know how to step back from this. Now I understand how to do this every day, not to be prisoner of ego. Yeah. And this was a huge change.
Okay.
It changed everything. This was the best discovering of my life.
And how can someone understand?
I discovered like a new way to be.
And how can someone, like for people listening to this, how can they start to understand that thing of my thoughts are not me, you know, like,
yes.
I just read it. I was reading again the Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, and he actually talks a lot about that separation of the voice in your head is not you, you know, like there's a deep. So
yes.
So can you kind of try to explain to us a little bit of how can we become aware of that?
So of course, this is what we experience with meditation. So the great practice to try to do this or to understand this is to practice Zazen meditation. But I have just one question for you, or okay, for people who are listening to the podcast. Do you know to now what you are going to think in 5 minutes?
No, no.
First question. No, me neither. Do you know Do you know where all these thoughts are coming from?
No.
Nobody knows. Even scientists, they are there. Why are we thinking? So why do we think that these ideas coming up are us?
Okay.
Because we have no control on this. Okay, we can learn. Maybe we can talk about this later. We can learn how to be more aware of all these thoughts and to control them sometimes. But in general, there is thoughts coming. I don't know why. I don't know what. Why now I'm speaking to you, I have no idea where it is coming from. I don't know what I'm going to say now. There is a little voice speaking in my head and I say this, but where is this voice coming from? It's not me.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like when you try to start meditating and or when you try to be like, okay, I'm gonna try not to think of anything, and then you start thinking of like I'm like, oh, like the second you stop thinking, you start thinking that you're not thinking anymore. You know, like okay, I made it. Okay, now I'm talking about, like, you know, like it's impossible.
Yes, but just one thing very important. When we meditate, we don't try to make empty mind. Huh?
Exactly.
This is a false idea of meditation. Huh? If you have empty mind, you are dead. Huh? So it's not the goal.
Exactly.
It's finished. Yeah. Empty mind. Yeah. We have 60,000 thoughts a day.
Yeah.
So what it's better to know a little bit what they are doing. Otherwise, we are prisoners of our thoughts. Okay. And you know, you like me, and maybe many of your listeners are people who like, we would like to have the control and to be independent. Mm-hmm. But if we let us direct it by our thoughts, we are prisoners, we are not independent. So it's a huge goal to be free of, to free his mind.
And what would be one of the first steps to start moving into, like, I'm gonna start going to the technical part of this talk, but how can we start moving towards incorporating your learnings to our life? I know it's like a 20-year path. I mean, 20-year journey you've done, but
no, I was very slow. It can be more quick.
Yes, like what could be some of the first steps? Like for someone who is as eager as me to, like, you know, like I want like a quick win, or I want to start moving in the right direction. Like, what would be some of those first steps, and what would be the direction that we should be trying to go through?
There are many, but I think the most important is to know how your brain is thinking. So this means from morning to evening, there are thoughts coming up. Mm-hmm. And they can take three different kinds of form. It can be images. It mm-hmm. can be inner voice. It can be sensations, feelings, and emotions, bodily thoughts, I would say.
Okay.
So it's very, morning routine, everyone should stand up in the morning and start listening, seeing what is coming up. And then it becomes an habit. And then in daily life, now I'm speaking to you, I'm aware of everything around me. I'm aware of what comes in my head. And this is the present moment. I'm not only here thinking, you know, when you are enclosed in your head, uh-huh. what I'm going to say. It's more open.
Okay. It feels like less weight.
I'm also someone very speed and a lot of energy. And this way to be is very funny. We don't need to be all the time very slow, or it can be in the movement. Huh?
I would like to touch on that because that's my impression of you. I mean, I don't know you, like know you. I know you through your work and what you do, but my perception of you is that you are this person with a bunch of energy and how you say like go getter, like I want to make it right and I want to do it correctly. I mean, you just told me in the first years of your practice you were putting a lot of energy into doing it correctly. I tend to be that way, and I know many of my listeners tend to be that way too, like the what's called in the United States like the type A personality. Sometimes it's called like this person that like overachievers, and they want to make it like, I want to be the best and do it correctly and stuff. What would be the better way of maybe channeling that energy, or what would be a healthy way of using that energy to our advantage, knowing that you were also a person with a bunch of energy and a bunch of curiosity? How did you learn to play with that or use it to your advantage instead of being a thing that makes you anxious and worrisome and stuff?
So I don't know type A, but I will look at it later. What it okay. is. I think it's important to be in harmony with energy. So the point is, what takes a lot of energy is when we fight against oneself. Mm-hmm. So if we are aware of this body who wants to move, want to do things, we can, sometimes we have the idea that spiritual people or spirituality, it's slow, always slow, always very careful. This is possible, and it's very useful to have a different kind of energy in the day. But when we want to go quick, it's also a load. It's also mm-hmm. possible we can be aware and quick. It's not necessarily bad to say. And so the problem I had before with all this is sometimes I put too much pressure at the beginning on me. And I remember when I arrived here, I was in charge of cleaning the mm-hmm. monastery. And I have a huge ideal of what is clean.
okay, yeah, I can imagine.
And in the monastery at the time, there was not so many women, and my friends, monks, they didn't have the same idea.
Yeah, I can imagine. And going to the bathroom and, you know, oh my yeah.
God. So I was cleaning from morning to evening, and sometimes and 1 week I told myself, okay, I have no time, it's not possible, it's not clean enough, so I will clean in the evening. So I did it 1 week or some days, and then I was totally out, very mm-hmm. tired, very. And my body said, okay, it's not the good way. And then after, I learned little by little to let go. And that I think it's important to have ideal. How do you say ideal? Yeah. But to go one more time, to go to this direction step by step.
Yeah, it's a balance. It's
and
it's,
this step by step can be intense, can be full of energy. It's not like I will never do it, but I take all my energy to do the next step.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I'm gonna take advantage of the time I have with you, and I also wanna have some questions that maybe I've never heard you answer before, but I'm really curious about, because I wanna know your point of view on, because I see you as a person with a lot of wisdom and a lot of maybe the word self-control, or that you've learned to have this. So I'm curious, how does that work on a relationship? And I don't know if your partner is also in the Buddhist tradition or not, but I'm like, what could we translate from what you've learned to our relationships, and you know, like if you could make a
gap,
parallel or a line between, okay, like this works really good on relationships, or you know, like maybe some sort of learnings you had that I bet you did differently before you were in the Buddhist tradition. Like, how have your relationships changed, and what do you think we can learn about that too?
First of all, I would say that the most difficult relationship is with partner.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is the huge challenge in our life, huh? Because uh-huh. we know each other so good that you know exactly what to say to make him.
It's
like anybody gets me like, but and it's also the same in certain way with people. So what I've learned in the last years is different thing, but the most important is I'm okay with people now. It's new, it's not at the beginning, it was not like this. Now I'm okay with people who doesn't have the same point of view than me.
Okay.
So I can be friends even if we don't have the same values, the same view of things, and this makes things very more quiet. Before, when my partner was not agree with me, for example, mm-hmm. and say, oh, this is not interesting, or I was like,
sorry for interrupting you, but your partner is in the it's also
a monk. Yes, he's okay. Buddhist. Yes.
Okay.
But at the beginning, when we were together, if he was not agree with me or not on the same point of view, it was like a punch in my body.
Okay.
And then I wanted to be the one who was right. And then it's about that. And now it happens sometimes that we're still fighting a little bit, but it's more for fun now. But because now I'm okay, it can be as you want. It doesn't hurt me. It doesn't change something in me. I'm okay. It is welcome, and it's the same in other relationship. I'm okay, so it's very quiet now.
I'm curious, why do you say it's quiet? Like, why do you use the word quiet?
Quiet because my reference is emotions. I'm very I'm also a therapist, you know, hypnosis, mm-hmm. and. So I'm working with emotions, with mind first, and I know emotions create our world. We start moving because of emotions. We start talking with people or doing things because there is something in us who leads us to something. There is this book, you know, Yuval Noah Harari.
Yeah,
Sapiens. He's talking about this. It's very interesting. 21 lessons for the 20th century.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and it's very interesting. Emotions are making us doing things. So I'm very interested in emotions. And when I know I feel quiet, it's here. It's okay. You can say what you want. I'm not agree, but I'm okay.
Okay. So you describe the lack of reaction as quietness, right?
Yes.
Like it's really a great way of looking at it, because it makes you look at it from another angle. And I would like to now talk about or a little bit about the importance of silence and the benefits we can get from silence. So could you kind of talk to me a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. Mm. I will recommend to people who are listening to the podcast when they switch off later, to take 1 to 5 minutes with doing nothing.
I thought you were going to say, I recommend them to buy my book. And, but, you know, like.
Not just to take, I can't say this also, but no. Not to take, not because reading is also putting words in silence. So the point is real silence. I mean, I stop everything and I do nothing. Just to reconnect with the pleasure of being alive. Because usually we fill our life with activities, with knowledge, with things. We have to do things during the day. Check, check, check. But I think the most revolutionary practice nowadays is to do nothing.
Okay. And it's going to sound dumb what I'm going to say, but how do you do that nothing? You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, what, like, like, should I just sit down and like close my eyes, or like, you know, like, can you give me the instructions for doing nothing?
That's really funny. Okay. You don't need instruction. Just sit somewhere.
Yeah, but like, I mean, how?
Please go in this point where it's not comfortable. This is the point. I need instruction. No. Just do nothing. It's take the risk. You Perfect. Will feel insecure. You will feel like, what I have to do? I must have a technique to do this. No. Just reconnect with real world, without technique, without words. Just perception of what is there.
I love it. Yeah, because we want instructions for everything. And there's this thing that always happens also with meditation. Like, am I doing it right? Am I supposed to feel this? Am I, you know, like, recently I've learned from listening to different people who do this for real, that say what you're saying, like, there's no right way, let it do what feels right to you. And also what you said about meditation, that it's not putting your mind in a blank space, but it's just like, looking at your thoughts maybe and let them come and go, right?
Yes.
I want to shift to another part of this conversation. I have a series of short questions. The answer doesn't have to be short, but you'll answer and we'll go to the next question, all right? Just before we start that, I have a big doubt. Maybe this will take us a little time, but... I feel like I need to ask this. How did you go from being a nun, I mean, like being a nun, to being an author? I mean, I know you were a journalist, but publishing books and doing this, they make you travel to present the book, and like, how was this a shift to you, and how did you start that? Because also, I didn't tell you that at the beginning, but this also is some sort of business podcast, right? So there's always this question, like, how did she or like whoever, how did they start doing this other thing? So one thing is you becoming great, if that's a thing, great on your tradition. You cannot become great at that, but I mean, like, you know, like being fully into that practice and mastering that, but then going to this other thing that is writing books and touring with the book and selling it and having a company signed for the rights of the, like, this is another world. So how did that happen, and how did you start on that way? That
path? To be honest, I was very surprising of all this. Huh? At the beginning, I wanted to share with people. So I thought after I started after I don't remember 13 or 15 years of practice, I wanted to share. I started with a blog. I created a blog with some chronicles, because also I love to write from since every And also I was aware then I wanted to stay connected with modern tools of society. I didn't want to be hided in my forest, but from the beginning I wanted to use social networks and all this stuff because that's where people are. So it was very important for me to do this. Let me remember. So a friend of mine asked me to write a short things for his book. So I write one page, and then the publisher asked me, "Okay, do you want to write something bigger?" So I wrote a booklet, and then he said, "Okay, great. Now we want a book about silence."
A little bigger and a little bigger, and now we want something bigger.
So I said, yes, silence, good idea, because I also had this in head. It was like a connection. And then I started to write, and it was very interesting as a process, because the idea of the book, I had no direction, so I could do what I want. I could write what I wanted. And so I started in front of my computer, like to write, and the words coming, you know?
Yes.
It's like chapter one, blah, 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 chapter two, do, 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 do. I had the structure of the book in 2 days. Everything was... And that's why I cannot say, to be honest, it's my book, because I would not say someone here is type say me what I have to do to write. It's not so mystical, huh? But I think we can receive the ideas of the universe, and if you are connected, things are going together, and then you are like a channel of something.
That's that. I love this that you're saying, because this is the second time I heard it from. I heard it from another author I respected a lot, and she told me something really similar, that because I always ask, like, okay, what's your process? You know, how do you come up with the ideas and stuff? And she said something really similar to what you said, like, the things are already here. And somehow I just, like, instead of me trying to impose what to write and stuff, I just let things go through me and write. Yes. And that in some way is scary for me, but at the same time, empowering, because it means I don't need to, like, I need to trust that I might know something about
it. Have confidence. Yes. When sometimes I open my screen, I don't know what will happen, and I have confidence that something will come. And then...
Okay.
And if you need some more technical aspect, maybe about how to... Mm-hmm. After, it's not very poetic, huh? I will tell you. It's funny. After, I need a deadline. If I have no deadline,
okay,
I don't do anything. But after, I know I have to write, 400,000 signs. Mm-hmm. It's in the contract. They say, oh, the book should do this. So I think, oh, how much is it? I had no idea. So mm-hmm. I did. I take my calculator and I say, how many signs every day? And then I knew after. Okay, I have to write 3,000 signs every day to be on time.
Okay.
I take my calendar. I put some days off. On Sunday, and then after every day, it's like I had the time one day in the morning usually. 1 hour. And okay. Then after some weeks, you have the book.
Wow. And the experience of traveling to... I mean, you told me that you loved to travel when you were younger. I mean, like to explore and to, you know, in some sort of way, I don't know if you did that before, but now you had to travel to different places to share about... Like, not just know the place, but share your knowledge or what you're doing and the book. How was that experience for you? What did you learn from that? What did you see?
It was very surprising. Also, I couldn't imagine before that this book would be spreading all over the world. And then publishers started to contact me. Do you want to come in Mexico, in Brazil, in China? And I was like, okay, let's do it. And after, it was very interesting, all these different cultures. I was like, okay, it's like this here, and here it's like this. How are they living? And so very, and also quiet. I was, because the chance I have as Buddhist nun is I don't need it, you know. I'm not prisoner of this one more time, because now I don't travel anymore and I'm okay. I'm here all the time because of COVID, and also because we can talk about this later. I decided not to take plane anymore, just once a year. So I will choose maybe one travel because of climate change, and I don't want to damage the earth more than it is. But before this, I traveled and I knew it was an experience, and I would not regret when it's finished. I don't, because my life here is also beautiful. So, but it was, Paloma can tell you, it was for me, I was there. It was very surprising. Sometimes I went to hotels. I could not pay for this. It was like 5 stars, and I was like, okay, it's like this, good. It's nice, but I don't need this.
Exactly. So how do you manage that? How do you, like, you're used to a way of living, right? That you don't need stuff, or like the basic stuff, but there's not this thing that I need to possess more things, and then you go to places where you go, as you're saying, to these big hotels or luxury and stuff. Do you ever think, or being there, like, it would be nice to have this type of bed in the monastery, or you know, like, or these clean bathrooms in the, you know, like, so
I guess it is.
so how, like, How do you enjoy this stuff without feeling guilty, but also not attached to it, for you to be needing it once you don't have it? You know what I'm saying? Am I explaining myself?
Yes, yeah, it's very clear. Because I'm happy also, because in my values, I know that All these beautiful things, sometimes they are made with suffering. I don't know where the food is coming from. There are a lot of electricity for the spa in the hotel. There are a lot of products in it which are damaging the earth. So when I was there, I enjoyed it. I was very happy. It's an experience. I'm very happy to have all this comfort, and I think it's paying respect for all this to enjoy it when it's there. But after, also when I think about people who have nothing, it makes me also a bad feeling, you know. Because I think it's not enough balance in the world between rich and poor. And so, how can I say this? So I'm very happy when I go back to my simple life, because it's more in accordance of what I want to live in life. So I would not spend my life on these 5-star hotels.
Do you think we're going to reach that balance sometime?
In the world?
Yeah. Do you think there's a chance for that to happen?
I think the Buddha, it's exactly the starting point of the teaching of Buddha. Why is there suffering in the world? Because of greed. Because we want, I say we because me too in a way, we always want something new, or we need things, possessions, tools, food to feel, because there is some emptiness or some lack or some bad emotions inside, and we think with taking things we will feel better, and it's wrong. So the point for the future is if that's now my point, what I want to spread in the world, that we have to work on our emotions to be more aware, and then to find ways to learn how to be more peaceful with all these emotions, and then we don't need to take things, and we don't need it. I don't need a super watch. Actually, at the moment, I need a watch, but anyway.
but that makes a lot of sense. That once you are full, in a way, like, or fulfilled, you don't need any other things to feel yes. that.
Yes. Or maybe, to be more precise, if you accept that sometimes in the day there is lack, there is missing something, if you are okay with suffering, you are free. Because also in our society, we always want to be always happy, always good, always da-da-da, but this is wrong. Nobody. Sometimes I'm sad, sometimes I'm angry. It's life, huh?
It's funny because here where we live, I live in Monterrey in Mexico, and we have really hard changes in the weather. Like, it could be really hot one day and the next day will be really cold and raining. And it's funny how when it's hot, everyone is saying, oh, I hope it will be cooler, right? Colder. And the moment it gets cold, oh, I miss the sun. So it's like, well,
instead of... When are you at peace?
Exactly. When are you at peace?
The Buddhist way is to be okay with what is there. This is because otherwise we are never here. If I always searching something else, I cannot enjoy when my cat is coming or when I really speak with people.
Just before going to the short questions, I know that our time is almost done. But I want to, because we started before going before recording. Can you remind me of what those Kankyu mean and how, because you told me at the beginning that you feel that you're connected with the universe and you've always kind of felt that, and now that's in your name, right? So can you can you just talk a little bit about that, and also could you explain me why there's this change of name when someone becomes a nun or a monk? Because also in our religions, I mean, in our traditions, they use this thing. Like, why do you think that is?
So Kankyo, it's two kanji. Kanji is a Japanese way to write. And kan, or Chinese, kan means observation. And kyo means the mirror. And the mirror symbolizes the universe. Mm-hmm. So it's a symbol because universe symbolizes also the mind, the big mirror of the mind. So we say when we meditate, we are like a big mirror. So we mm-hmm. can reflect everything coming up. Okay. So, and why we change a name? So I think it's... also a way to remember that we are monks and nuns, like the clothes, like the beautiful haircut.
Very, very convenient. It's convenient.
Very, convenient. Very economic.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't need anything to maintain it.
And So it's a help to remember what we have choose, okay. Which way we have.
I think that could be applied to whomever, right? Like have things that remind you of who you want to be or who you are, and like a constant reminder. That's I've never thought about it that way, but I think it's really helpful. Thank you. I'm gonna go to these quick questions. All right, you don't have to answer quickly, but my question will be, and I'll go to the next question. Number one, what has been one of the worst advices you've been told?
When you will be adult, you have to follow the rules.
Okay. I wonder how does that work with you? I mean, in you know, like okay, now I'm a nun, I'm in a Buddhist tradition, but I shouldn't follow the rules. So how do you manage to not follow the rules sometimes? Like, what rules is it okay to break?
Ah, yes. No, it was more like when you will be adult, you cannot choose. You have to follow the direction.
Oh, okay, okay.
And now, of course, I'm in a tradition with many rules, but it is rules that I have accepted. Mm-hmm. So it's okay.
Yeah, so you don't see them as rules anymore, kind of. It's more like a way of...
Yes, and it's more helpful. Sometimes when something says, I don't want to do this, but I know they are here to help me to go further.
Perfect.
So it's okay.
Next question. What's one of the best advices you've got, like they've given you?
You cannot fail before having tried.
Great. Perfect. Okay, next question. What's an advice?
I don't know if it's in English.
No. It was perfect. Okay. What's one advice you used to give to someone and you consider it a good advice, but with time, with your experience, now you wouldn't give that advice?
Follow your dreams.
Okay. You wouldn't give that anymore.
You are disappointed.
No, I'm not. I just heard. No, I never get disappointed. I always love this because it's like, okay, what's going on?
Because not only follow your dreams, but also it's not only like this. We have to take care of everything around. It's more follow your dreams and open your eyes to what is beside.
Nice. I like it. What's an not popular opinion you have? Like an opinion you have that not many people share with you?
Yes, it's about veganism, because I'm vegan, so I don't eat any animal products. This mm-hmm. is one of my deep value in life. But I know a lot of people who still eat meat, even if animals are suffering, and even if it's a very hard thing for the climate, for the earth. So I'm not very popular on this topic. More and more, I hope in the future I will be like a precursor, how do you say?
Like a leader, like you started that movement.
Yes. Yeah. Not me, only me, but many.
Yeah. When did you become a vegan? Like, what happened? Like, at what age or where? What happened in your life? Or what moment did you, like, okay, this is the right way to go on veganism?
With veganism?
Yeah.
Yes. So I was quite all the time vegetarian, also as a child. Then I had very strange 1 year. I say I want to eat meat. It was with 35 years old or something like this. Then during not 1 year but 6 months. Then I said no about that. And then it was over. And 2 years later, I saw many informations about eggs, about the little baby cow and things like this. So I thought, okay, but I love eggs. I love cheese because in France we have a lot of cheese. I have to quit that. So then I get this in all this information about animals, about farming and so on. But I live in France, so we have a lot of cheese, and I love cheese actually. But I had to decide. It was very clear. It's like an inner decision. And if I would have continued to eat cheese, I would have feel bad, not like guilty or something like this. Yeah. So since then, I'm vegan and happy and in very good health. Because sometimes really people help.
That's always that's always the question with veganism, right? Like, how do you get your proteins from? How do you get right? Like, I know. Yeah, don't worry. Next question. What's something people don't know about you, or you think people might not know about you, that will surprise them?
I don't know. Because I say many things in my books. I'm not so secret. Okay. So maybe this afternoon I was in the farm, the Kibo, the farm I created, and I was working with wood and making building things. Maybe they don't know. I don't
know. Nice. What's one book or movie or documentary that do you think changed your life? Like after reading it or watching it, there was a before and after in your life.
Yeah, there is this documentary from Al Gore, you know, who should have been normally president of the USA, but he didn't. And he made this, I don't remember the name, it's about of the state of the planet.
The Ugly Truth.
Yes. And so this very important movie, documentary.
Perfect. I'm almost done. What's something that you think about a lot? Like something you're really curious about lately that's on your mind or takes up a lot of thoughts in your mind?
What are human beings? So what are all these thoughts? Where are they coming from? This is my main interest.
Okay, and a follow-up question on that is what are your plans for the future? Like, I know we already talked about, like, you know, it's okay to think about the future, but what are your next, if you have projects or ideas you want to explore or things you want to do, right? Like, could you share some of them with me?
Yes. So I wrote a new book last year. The name of the book is Dancing in the Middle of Chaos. So it's talking about what we are doing at the moment with COVID and all this situation of the earth. So I'm very interested to spread those ideas in the society. This is one of something coming now. And the second thing is I created, as I said before, a farm, which is also a refugee place for animals coming from bad statement or old animals. And I really want to develop this and to create a resilient place where we use less of carbon, less of petrol and things like this, where we can collect water from the sky and doing things without electricity. This is I think it's the way to live it for the future. This is resilience. It's my new big interest. And also in this farm, we can welcome people to do retreats and to learn meditation. I also would like to develop a program of studies, how to manage better emotions, how to be more peaceful and more happy with the life as it is. As it is.
Great. I'm excited for all of those things. So I'll be checking out your book and be aware, like how you said, pay attention to what you're doing on the farm. One last question. Thank you, first of all, for sharing so much with me and opening up. I really enjoyed it. I admire your work.
Thank you for your question. You're doing. Thank you. I feel like with a friend. It's very good.
Yeah, I would love to meet you in person and go eat something big. And if you ever come to Mexico, let me know, and we'll make sure you're well. Well served. My last question is a question I ask to every guest, and it's throughout your life, all the stages in your life and your work, you've learned a lot of stuff, a lot of things. If you had to keep three learnings in mind, that will be kind of your compass, right? Like your north. What three learnings would those be?
The first one, very important, I took previously, is we are not our thoughts. This is the very, very the main things that I want like to remember. Second one is the importance of bringing also joy and smile in the world. So even if there are difficulties, taking moments to open the heart and be with people with joy, it's very precious. I think we need that. And third point is there is, how can I say this clearly? Intelligence is not enough, or sometimes it's not necessary. We don't need to be very clever to understand everything, to have a point of view of everything. It's important also to have confidence in the world, in the life as itself. So to forget all this stuff and just be there.
Thank you everyone for listening. I hope you have enjoyed this episode of The Mentes with Kankio Tanier. My name is Diego Barrazas. See you in the next episode. Bye.